This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray. It is game week. Week one of the college football season is here, and it's Wednesday, meaning Wednesdays with Wes is back. We'll actually have two guests today, and I believe, still working out some things, we'll have two guests every Wednesday. But our guest today, in addition to Wes Reynolds, will be Todd Furman. Of course, you know him from the Bet the Board podcast, which, much to our chagrin as bettors, will no longer be in circulation this year. But Todd jumping on, just talking some big picture stuff, dove into a couple of games, but looking forward to getting Todd's thoughts here as the college football season is here, and we will be getting more love, certainly, as the year goes on from Todd and others. But appreciate Todd coming on. We're going to dive into that. I do have a best bet here in the opening segment that, I don't know. It's going to make me sweat a little bit. There's no doubt, but I will get into that here in just a moment. But a little bit of housekeeping, because, you know, we've been doing this all throughout the summer and been talking about the reviews that we've got. I did laugh at a review. This came in on Friday. 5 stars. Thank you very much on iTunes. Best college football betting content. Love the episodes with Matt Eumanns. Yes, of course, Matt and I will be breaking down the card on Thursday. So make sure you check in for that one. Instead of playing the Notre Dame drinking game, try taking a drink every time Tim says Hawaii. Yes, we did have an amazing trip out to Hawaii, and I'm trying to embrace that as much as possible. But we've had great sponsors, and the Hawaii mentions will not be going away because we've got multiple sponsors from Hawaii on the podcast all year long, including our friends over at Rainbow Authentics. A big mahalo to Rainbow Authentics for their generous support of our trip out to Hawaii, and they'll be with us all year long. So if you saw the Matsuzawa game-winning field goal that was making the round, Rainbow Authentics there on that scoreboard. I'm wearing my Rainbow Authentics hat right now. Check them out, rainbowauthentics.com, as they are looking to give back to the Hawaii student-athletes. They've got memorabilia. They've got hats, got some T-shirts, from my understanding, from Mike Kawazoe in the works. So their mission, folks, is rooted in community, built on excellence, powered by you. So help them out as we want to continue to build up that Hawaii football and all sports program, as you're helping empower student athletes and coaches, strengthening local programs, and giving back to the community. The custom gear ensures you look best every day, while your purchase directly supports the next generation of Hawaii athletes. So rainbowauthentics.com, rainbowauthentics.com. All right, before we get into this best bet, I gotta say I was blown away this week with looking at some of the rankings on iTunes. And, you know, we got into the top 200 a couple times last year, which was so badass to see. And this thing has been growing, as this is, I believe, the fourth season of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast, and 3 episodes every week. As I like to say, continue to tell everyone, if you're going to see some random stranger, just let them know about the podcast. But I was absolutely blown away. So we got into the top 200, which was awesome. And then I checked again, and we were at 156 on Monday. Awesome. Highest I'd ever seen it. Later that day, or actually the next day, 133. And then Tuesday night, I checked the rankings because I was getting obsessed. 96th. I couldn't believe it. We were in the top 100. And that is a testament to all of you as you continue to be loyal listeners. As I understand, it's college football season, so we're going to get a little bit of a bump with the college football season being here. But man, to be up at 96 in the podcast rankings, there are all sports shows, to be number 96 was just incredible. So let's keep building it up, man. Let's keep doing it, and hopefully we have a winning season here. All right. This best bet, I'll be giving out all of our best bets tomorrow on the podcast with humans, like we always do. We run through the card. I know that's an episode that you guys love so much. I love doing that episode. But I was looking at the Thursday card, and, you know, we've seen a lot of movement. Boise State, USF, we'll get into that with Wes. And we've seen, you know, a couple other games move a little bit, a lot in the total in Miami and Wisconsin, Miami of Ohio and Wisconsin, that down to 39.5. It's kind of been ping ponging around Nebraska and Cincinnati. The game I'm going to is at UL Monroe. And hear me out on this one. And if I get it wrong, feel free to fire away on me. Just don't give us a bad rating. Just go into my mentions and tell me an idiot. So St. Francis of Pennsylvania, the Red Flashes. Remember back to March Madness and the story we heard about St. Francis, how they had no NIL and they came out and won the NEC, got to the NCAA tournament. It was such a cool story to see St. Francis make the NCAA tournament. But shortly thereafter, we found out that they would be transitioning to Division III. Division III, a division that is near and dear to my heart as I played Division III athletics. But this will be the final year of Division III, Division I athletics. And I believe beginning in 26-27, they will become a D3 program. Now, they are honoring the athletic scholarships. But with that, if you are a student athlete or were a student athlete there at St. Francis, you would likely look for a new home. So they're playing UL Monroe, and we'll get to the Warhawks here in just a moment. I don't want to go too crazy into this game, but I did do too much of a deep dive on it. Right now at FanDuel, it's Wednesday. I'm recording this at 11:40 a.m. Pacific time. The number at FanDuel is 23.5 minus 20. I bet that. And this St. Francis roster, from what I gather, is completely destroyed from last year's team. So if you look at their leading right wide receiver, Gavin Thompson, he transferred out to Sacramento State. Jaden Ivory, their second leading receiver, he transferred out to Southeast Louisiana. Their two leading rushers, DeMarcus McElroy and Markel Holman, both gone. McElroy to Merrimack, Holman to Western Illinois. They, from my reading here, have one starter back on the offensive line, and he is shifting from guard to left tackle. Now, he was a third-team all-conference player a year ago. And then defensively, they lost a first-team all-conference player, two second-team all-conference players, and two third-team all-conference players to transfers. They had a bunch of pieces transfer up to the higher levels of FBS football, as Pierre Royster, their safety, he moved on to UAB. They had another player on the defense go to Colorado State. They had multiple players go to Maryland. They had another player go to New Mexico. Another player go to Monmouth. I believe they have three starters back on offense, and one of them, I want to say, was a wide receiver that they're transitioning to running back. They do have their quarterback back, and two back on defense. And if you're transitioning to Division III, can't imagine the influx of talent was massive. I was looking at the game notes, and a lot of it was appeared in a handful of games, making first career start. His first season or his second season with the program, first collegiate action. So they're going down to UL Monroe. They're a 23.5 point underdog at FanDuel right now. Now, would I be a lot more excited if Ahmad Hardy, who ran for over 1,300 yards a year ago, was still with the Warhawks and not at Missouri? Yeah, that would be nice. But I got to lay the 23.5 here. If I look like a utter buffoon, it won't be the first, it won't be the last, but I'm very curious what this number goes to when this number pops across Las Vegas. I would guess this thing does not last at 23.5. So hopefully we get this out and maybe you take a little nibble. It's not the biggest bet that I've ever made in my life, but I did put a unit on UL Monroe against the soon to be Division III Red Flash of San Francisco. Now, I will point out, St. Francis did beat Kent State a year ago, the worst team in all of FBS. And Kent State, by the way, a 6.5-point favorite against Merrimack in week number one. Do with that what you will. So once again, great show ahead. Wes Reynolds going to be joining us next, and Todd Furman after that as well. Lastly, I do want to point out, we are wearing some amazing shirts out in Hawaii, and those were made by Kahala, the original Aloha shirt brand, and they help make our VSiN broadcast out in Hawaii possible. Going to be partnered up with this podcast here for a little bit. Founded in Honolulu back in 1936, Kahala has been a pioneer in island style for nearly 90 years. Their 90th anniversary will be next year. Kahala's legacy is woven into the fabric of Hawaii, creating the first authentic Aloha shirts and setting the standard for quality, comfort, and vibrant design. I can attest to that. Those shirts were tremendous. Proud supporter of University of Hawaii Athletics, Kahala is dedicated to giving back to the community and celebrating local pride. You could shop their full collection online, kahala.com. That's K-A-H-A-L-A.com. They have 6 stores if you're headed out to Hawaii, and you can also check them out on Instagram at Kahala for the latest styles and inspiration. They not only have the Aloha shirts, but they've got cooling polos, perfect for golf. I've got a quarter zip from Kahala that I can't wait to wear later on in the winter months. So check them out, kahala.com. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Wednesdays with Wes. Wes Reynolds will run through his favorite plays of week one. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Another football season is here, boys and girls, and that means Wednesdays with Wes is back. Excited for another season with my guy, Wes Reynolds. Last year, we tried to keep these relatively brief. We will hear from Todd Furman after Wes, so this is going to be a little bit of a longer Wednesday edition, but always going to be checking in with Wes, and you and I bet very similarly, Wes. In the sense that, you know, we like to play off some overreactions and, you know, embrace the stink, as I like to say, with some of the fishy lines that are out there. How do you attack week one? And, you know, I'll mention this to Todd, too. Just curious your philosophy. You know, what does your card ultimately look like? These numbers have been up for over 2 months. We're seeing weekday moves. How do you tend to attack week one?
I'll be honest with you, Tim, and glad to be back on with you for another season. Week one is, I feel like, one of the most difficult personally for me, because I know that everybody wants to get involved because we've all been jonesing, right?
Of course.
And, you know, need that cash to feed that Jones, as they say in Grateful Dead, throwing stones. That's what we have, you know. Hey, we've been waiting for college football, and we've been talking about season wins and futures and the Heisman Awards and all that stuff, and now it's here. But this is a different phenomenon that I think that we've seen over the last decade as we've had the national retail books become more prevalent, because it used to be out in Las Vegas or even in the offshore market, you would have these put up. You'd have games of the year, obviously, put up to drive traffic to whatever your site or your brick and mortar book, what have you. That's not new. But having the full card up so long is still relatively new, you know, really over the last several years, because they wouldn't put up all these games, but now they're doing it. And I think the bookmakers are doing it for a couple reasons. Number one, to drive traffic when it's a slow time in the summer, but also the fact that they want these out there because they want some of these sharp bettors to go ahead and bet them at lower limits. Okay, we're not confident in our numbers, because I think bettors maybe aren't as confident in their numbers, but the bookmakers aren't confident either, Tim. And so you get some of these sharp guys, it's like, okay, I'll give you, you know, whatever the limit is in May or June, which is certainly not what it's going to be on game day or game week for that matter. So I'll give you, like, let's say you're a sharp bettor, I'll give you like 2 dimes. Help me beat my numbers into place. and then you think you're ready. So I think week one, it's a little bit more difficult because we haven't seen most of these teams play. And a lot of times we like to judge the overreactions and the market moves as you get into like weeks two, three, and four. Like the next 4 weeks are like my favorite part of the season, because that's when I think that you can, you know, play against these overreactions in terms of the betting market. But not necessarily now, because you look, a lot of these numbers, they've moved a ton over the last few weeks. So it's like, okay, you know, if you're betting, and keep in mind, there's still going to be buy orders, right, late in the week from like big groups and sharper bettors. But if you miss the number, you're going to see a lot of buybacks, I think, over the weekend. So you're going to see a lot of these numbers that have one-way traffic, that as we get closer to game day, as we get closer to the weekend, you're going to see buybacks on opposite sides. So don't necessarily chase numbers too much, I would advise.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. And, you know, we've seen a couple of movements back. Oregon State, Cal, that game was sitting 3 after opened 1.5 in favor of Oregon State. What happened this week? It got banged right back down to 1.5. So we've seen some movement in those lines. Some have kind of stayed stagnant. We've seen even maybe a little bit more puppy love. So I want to jump right into it, Wes, and we're going to run through some of your plays. And once again, it is worth noting, and you'll mention it, you may have gotten a better number, but I want to start off a game that really fascinates me. And I'm glad to have you on Wednesday's pod, because this game will kick off to start really week one, 5:30 Eastern. You've got Boise State down at South Florida. We all know that Ashton Gentry is gone there for Boise State, but they are a team in my eyes that is going to win the Mountain West. I have bet them to win the Mountain West. I did that when they were in town for the Mountain West Conference Media Day. But this number opened as high as 10, and right now we're sitting at market around 6. No real movement on the total, a ton. So the number sits 6. What's your thoughts on this game, and would you still play it at 6?
Smaller, I would play it. I like the spot here, and I agree with you on Boise State. I still think that they're very much the class of the Mountain West, even with Ashton Gentry gone, and they're going to be the class of the new Pac-12 when that starts here very soon. Now, there's going to be a lot more on the quarterback this year. There's going to be a lot more on Maddox Mattson, I think, with Gentry gone. And I think he played solid last year, didn't turn the ball over very much, but there's going to be more of a pressure on him this time around. Spencer Danielson, of course, you know, was the interim after Avalos got fired a couple years ago, and then he earned the job. So that first season, so I still think that they were galvanized really behind him. And now they go to the road. This is a very tough trip, and I know that they did win their opener last year in that shootout with Georgia Southern. I think it was 56-45. But now you go down to Florida, and we've seen that before. These teams from the north or the teams from the west, they go down to Florida, and I don't know if you know this, Tim, it's very humid Sunshine State.
You're gonna find out
on.
I'm going to find out on Sunday, Wes, that's for sure.
Yes, absolutely. So this is going to be, you know, it's going to be humid. It's going to be hot down there. I think South Florida is going in the right direction. Alex Golesh, this is a guy that may be in the Power Four with maybe by even as soon as next year. I think, you know, he took around or turned around to kind of what was a moribund program that's always a sleeping giant, because you're right there in Tampa and you can obviously recruit a lot of talent. They have two quarterbacks now that are experienced, because remember Byron Brown went down with the knee injury last year, and then Bryce Archie finished in for the season 5-3, and then they had that 5-OT victory in the Hawaii Bowl over San Jose State. So now you've got two competent quarterbacks here, and you've also got a defense that gets in the backfield and forces a lot of turnovers. I think that this is a little bit of a tricky spot for Boise State. And you look at South Florida's schedule, you would think, okay, now they've got the Gators on the road next week, and they've got the U on the road the following week. Okay, they're going to be looking ahead because they want to play the bigger state schools where they feel like they've got snubbed. They're not looking ahead of Boise State. Boise State's a brand name. Boise State was a college football playoff team. So I think there's no doubt that you're going to get South Florida's focus here. And I think Boise State, they're going to be in for a very close game here. And that's why you've seen that number precipitously drop.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And it is going to be a really intriguing one that I'm having buyer's remorse. I have no exposure to it. Wish I had the South Florida plus 10 that was out there this summer. A number that hasn't moved a ton, maybe a little bit towards the under, which maybe makes the dog a little bit more enticing. Staying on Thursday night, we've got the Golden Gophers of Minnesota, PJ Fleck, Sky U Ma, Row the Boat, all that nonsense. And you've got Buffalo, a team that, you know, maybe is a bit of a head of schedule as of where they are here in the Pete Lembo era. And number now sits still at 17.5. There was an 18 out there, but still pretty solidly sitting at 17.5. Do the Bulls head into the Twin Cities on Thursday night and make this thing competitive?
I think they absolutely do. And I took plus 18. There's still a couple of those out there. And I took under 44 on the total. Buffalo's defense, by the way, 10 starters back for this unit. And Pete Lembo's an experienced old gun here in the MAC, of course, had some successful seasons at Ball State. You know, wasn't the sexiest of hire, but he knows how to win in the MAC, and he knows how to get the most out of his kids. They finished 6-2, by the way, where they were picked to finish near dead last, and they were 6-2 in the MAC, and they've got a good shot, I think, to reach the MAC title game. Now they go to Minnesota, where new quarterback Drake Lindsey going to be a freshman quarterback there now as Brosmer, the UNH transfer, is gone. So, you know, a lot of newness there. New defensive coordinator there at Minnesota. Corey Heatherman is now at the U at Miami. Danny Collins promoted from within. And I wonder about Minnesota, because the one thing about them is PJ Fleck is always good at bowls, and he's been a consistent winner, but never gotten it to that elite level. And PJ Fleck is always in the coaching carousel rumors at the end of the year. And, you know, if you talk to people close to that program, he's been wanting to kind of angle this to a bigger job. He's been wanting to row the boat somewhere else and you know, in one of their 10,000 lakes and go to another state or another city, wherever he wants to go. But yeah, Minnesota is not a team. I think they're very much a middling team in the Big Ten this year. I thought a lot of points for a very low scoring game that I would anticipate. Now, you worry it's going to be 30-7 if you took Buffalo like I did. But I think the Bulls in the under is the way to go here for this one.
So let's go to Friday, and we're sitting here on a Wednesday afternoon, and we saw I don't know if it was a buy order, but we saw certainly some movement here in this particular game. Not a ton of neutral site games in week one, which I love, but we do have one in Charlotte as the 49ers open up a new era. Tim Albin comes after winning the conference there at Ohio. He now goes down to Charlotte, which, you know, many people believe it can be a sleeping giant. I guess I'll believe it when I see it. Our guy Biff didn't ultimately bring any wins, but this number has gone off the key of 7 as App State heads to Charlotte. I would imagine there will be more boys from Boone there in the stands than 49er faithful, but still, we've seen a move here. And once again, maybe it's moved too far from where you bet it, but you actually like the dog a little bit here in this spot.
I do. And a new coach, by the way, for Appalachian State as well, Dole Leggins, who, if I'm pronouncing that right, who is in the NFL, but first time head coach here. A lot of transfers, a lot of portal for really both of these teams. And that's pretty much across the sport in college football. So, you know, I don't know if they have an identity yet, Tim. I don't know what to expect out of the Mountaineers second necessarily. They were one of the worst defenses in the Sun Belt last year. They gave up around 33 points a game. First losing season since 2013, as now Sean Clark shown the door and Loggins brought in. But I look at Charlotte. Tim Albin, yeah, he did a very good job at Ohio. And this Charlotte program, I think you're right, it could be a sleeping giant, but they got to figure out what they want to be. And, you know, they got to get they're spending money on the, you know, to improve that stadium. But you got to go in the NIL and you got to, you know, have more money in the pool for assistance and whatnot. But he was a consistent winner, Tim Albin, at Ohio. And very tough schedule, by the way, for the Charlotte 49ers this year. They'll have North Carolina and Bill Belichick next week. But I thought 7 was a square price for this team, and still would say at around 6. I just think that he might be the guy because he's proven he can get it done at, you know, the group of 5 level, certainly in Athens at Ohio. And App State, I just wonder, you know, first time head coach, a lot of portal guys trying to figure out who they want to be. I think App State's the more talented team. They certainly are, and they've had a better program over the last decade. But I thought Charlotte was a little bit live here Friday night.
You know, it's funny. We'll talk more about it later on here with Todd, because he and you have a similar mindset on Army. going under their win total. You wrote it up for the VSiN guide. We talked about it here on this podcast feed. I tailed that play. Look, I would love for the Tarleton State, what are they, the Titans, I want to say? I would love for them to make their way over, or the Texans, I beg your pardon, make their way over to the banks of the Hudson and pull off that upset. Talk about a brutal travel spot, man. You go from the Pacific Northwest all the way to West Point on a short week to get ready for the triple option. So, man, that would be great if they could pull the outright upset. But that's, I was just looking at the schedule this week. I'm like, man, that's as rough as it gets. A short week to prepare for Army.
Because that's actually not an easy spot for Army, because then you got to go to Manhattan. You got to go to Little Apple to play Kansas State, you know, who's certainly smarting from their defeat over at Aviva Stadium in Dublin last weekend to Iowa State, where I thought Kansas State kind of looked like the better team, but just kind of shot themselves in the foot on fourth down. So I was initially looking Tarleton State. Now this is going to be a pass for me, because that's a terrible spot for those guys.
No, I totally agree. All right. Let's get to it. The big one, maybe the biggest game of the college football season, happening in week one. If you look at the coaches poll, which I think all of us snicker at, it is 1-2. AP poll, it's 1-3. The defending champ is a slight home favorite as of now against Texas, who is the number one team in the country and the underdog. So we've seen some steady movement here on Texas. There were some threes this offseason. It's down to 1.5 yesterday. Tuesday at Circa, it was down to 1. You know, I was looking back, the last time, Wes, Ohio State was a home underdog, November of 2018, when they were a 4.5-point dog against Michigan, and they went out and dropped 62 on Michigan on that particular day. That's the only time they've been an underdog here in the last like 7 or 8 years at home. I don't know if it'll get there, but you are intrigued by Hook 'em Horns here. Noon on Saturday.
Yeah, I bought to 3, and I did take some 2.5. And I don't even know if really the spread is going to come into play here. Ohio State, what do they say, Tim? They don't rebuild, they reload. And they certainly have plenty of 5 stars. But that's a lot to replace from that national championship team, especially on defense. Not only losing Jim Knowles, the defensive coordinator who Penn State spent a lot of money to go ahead and procure to a state college, and one of the reasons I'm high on that team, but the entire defensive line gone. All the starters are gone for Ohio State. So you've got talent that replaced them, and probably guys that will eventually be NFL players, but there's a lot of youth, I think, on that defense. Much has been, I think, made of the offense and how's this new quarterback going to be? Julian Sand won the job, and that's not a surprise considering he was at Alabama. So Alabama didn't recruit bad quarterbacks. So I think the offense is probably going to be fine for this team, but I worry a little bit about this defense. And I know Arch Manning has never thrown a pass in the college game on the road. I was talking to somebody about that earlier this morning, but I think Texas – this is, both teams are going to be motivated, but might be a little bit on the extra on the Texas side, because if you remember in the playoff game last year, Texas was right there to tie that game. And then remember Jack Sawyer with the strip sack and the fumble return pretty much ended it all, or maybe Sark kind of overthought the play calling there at the goal line. Is Texas back? They always say that on the Twitter machine.
Texas is back, folks.
I think Texas
to be
is
Joe Tessitore.
Yes, yes, and I think Joe Tess is going to be proven right here. I think Texas is back. I just think more experience, a little bit more of a veteran team. Remember several years ago when we saw Baker Mayfield in Oklahoma go in there, and then he put the flag on the O, and it was a whole big deal there in the horseshoe, but I think the Longhorns are going to be ready for these guys. I'm a little bit more confident about them, that they've got a little bit more hunger early than Ohio State does, even though the Buckeyes, the defending national champions.
Yeah, I have not bet this game yet. Maybe I end up on Ohio State and hold my nose, and we'll see how it goes. But I'm very curious to see how ultimately this is bet in the market, as on VSiN Primetime on Tuesday night. Matt Grill from DraftKings Sportsbook said, as of now, meaning Tuesday night, Texas was the most liability that they had heading into week one. You know, Wes, I can always count on you going to some really ugly dogs. And that's, you know, that's what we love to do here sometimes. Hold our nose and just, I don't want to say pray, but hold our nose and hope that we get there in an ugly dog game. So I want to go to Georgia State and Ole Miss. Ole Miss, what a disappointment a year ago. The fact that they lose to Kentucky, the only conference game Kentucky won all year. And essentially that was the reason that Ole Miss missed out on the playoff. And, you know, I must have missed when Lane Kiffin was tweeting about Tennessee when they got their ass kicked in that opening round. He was too busy tweeting about, you know, SMU and Indiana. But I digress. Mississippi, Ole Miss, 35.5-point home favorite against the Panthers of Georgia State.
Yeah, boy, this is one you're going to be uncomfortable betting throughout this game on Saturday night. But we embrace the pain and we embrace discomfort, Tim. And that's what I'm going to do here with Georgia State. Still some 36.5 out there. Anything above 35, I think, is still good. Ole Miss, usually we know that Lane likes to kind of run it up on these non-conference teams, and they don't stop scoring. They don't, you know, slow down the tempo or anything like that. So I don't think they necessarily do the same here, but this is a different schedule this year for Ole Miss, because usually you're playing all these teams and you don't have a big SEC game until like the first week of October or the end of the month, and you have a bye week in between. Not so for Ole Miss this time around. They play at Kentucky next week. Remember Kentucky, the Wildcats, even in a 4-8 season, they get their highlight was beating Ole Miss as double-digit underdogs down there in Oxford last year. And then Ole Miss has Arkansas the following week. So you've got these conference games right away. How much do you necessarily want to show in week number one against Georgia State, who's a second-year coach, Del McGee? A lot of athleticism on this team, but, you know, very portal-heavy, of course. And they're a team that, you know, has some talent and evaluates talent well and kind of get picked apart a little bit in the portal. So that's what they have to deal with in the future. But the new quarterback, Austin Simmons, is going to be the starter, and he should be, and he's a talented guy, and, you know, played against Georgia and led that scoring drive in the upset win. New receivers for these guys, offensive line being made over with four new starters. Maybe a little bit slower start than we think for Ole Miss. A lot of guys that they lost, even though they're very talented. I thought this number was a little big, despite Lane Kiffin's history.
All right, let's get to your beloved Indiana Hoosiers here. They open up the season against Old Dominion, and I had to go back and look at week one last year, because Indiana did not beat the closing number as they closed as a 25-point favorite against FIU, but that game opened 18.5 over the summer and had a 7-point move. But the one thing I want to note, and you know this well, and I'm sure many of our listeners do as well, Indiana last year, as a favorite, and this includes not covering against FIU in week one, 9-2 ATS and a nation's best 16.6 cover margin. So they were the best team in the country covering the number by points as a favorite a year ago. They didn't have the best cover percentage as a favorite a year ago. There were a couple teams slightly better than them, but 9-2 ATS and covering those games as a favorite by over 16 points. So let's get to Saturday in Bloomington. I don't know if there's going to be a celebration at all for making the playoff a year ago. You would know better than I would. You bring in Fernando Mendoza to be your quarterback. Do we see old Kurt, run up the score here on the Monarchs of Old Dominion?
Well, that was certainly the pattern last year, and that's why I'm waiting to bet this. I want to see some 24 or better. It's pretty much painted 23.5. Old Dominion has some familiarity, of course, with Kurt Cignetti from his time at James Madison. ODU, of course, was a fellow member of the Sun Belt, so they're going to know the schemes, I think, here. And much has been made of the soft schedule from Indiana, especially, you know, our guy Brett McMurphy, man. I almost had to deny his Facebook friend request, man. He's been killing Indiana.
Uncle Brett.
He's killing my alma mater. Come on, man. If I didn't like you so damn much, I wouldn't have done that. But, you know, the schedule is easy in the non-conference. So if people think this is just going to be a layup, I believe it is going to be a sellout for the opener at Memorial Stadium on Saturday afternoon in Bloomington. But I think this number could be a little high. This is still a little bit of newness, and there might be some anxiety for Indiana because now you have expectations, right? Now it's like, okay, you know, we went to the playoff. We got Kurt Cignetti. We're on a roll. We're a relevant program. We're no longer a doormat in the Big Ten. maybe a slow start here against ODU. I think ODU is going to be excited to play Indiana. This isn't just, okay, we're going to a, you know, bigger conference school that's a doormat. This is like, we're playing a playoff team. So I think Ricky Ronnie is going to have those guys ready to go. Good quarterback there in Colton Joseph. This might be where I play a little bit of first half. Maybe we get a slow start out of Indiana and then they pull away in the second half. 13.5 with juice now. Love to get that extra half in that 14, but I think first half might actually be the better way to go here with the Monarchs.
Going against the alma mater, the cover machine.
I know. Shame on me, man. I'm they're going to revoke my Hoosier 100 privileges.
Wes, I'm looking forward to doing this all year long, man. Always appreciate it. And we'll be back next week and every week, Wednesdays with Wes here on the feed. There he is, Wes Reynolds. We'll talk to Todd Furman on the other side of the break.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
And as promised, Todd Furman joins us right now. And normally, I wouldn't be able to get Todd Furman to jump on a podcast week of a game. No way. But he and Payne Insider made the decision this offseason to hang it up in the podcast space. So, Todd, I'm sure so many of my listeners on this podcast are listeners or were listeners to your pod. I certainly was as well. Give us a little bit of the backstory. How's this offseason been as you are in the retirement home of the podcast space?
If I had to use one word, Tim, it would be different. My schedule and the cadence of what a lead up to college football week zero and week one, significantly different than what it's been over the last 10 plus years trying to figure out, hey, look, I don't have to spend nearly as much time with the top five marquee games each and every week. I can deep dive into the annals of FCS. I can spend a little bit more time in the G5, but no doubt it was bittersweet to say goodbye to the Bet the Board podcast platform after more than 750 episodes, 10 plus years with that show. A special thanks goes out to you as one of our loyal listeners, along with, like you said, a probably significant amount of your listenership. And look, I'd like to think that hopefully that's what buoyed the VSiN College Football Podcast getting into the top 100 on Apple,
yeah,
that you shared on social media. So all those Bet the Board listeners are looking for an additional home to try and get their college football content. But it'll definitely be different. I'll miss my prolonged chats on Wednesday morning with Brad and Payne. Primarily what went on behind the scenes that was probably a little bit more R-rated and wasn't exactly available for general and public consumption. But at the same time, look, sometimes you have to evolve or die. And we felt that the way the space is moving forward, it kind of evolved without us. And it's going to take a little bit of a different look for us to get back into the NFL and college space. But podcasts like yourself and what you and Matt Humans have put together definitely have taken the baton and then some. And I hope that you guys continue your momentum as we start actually talking about meaningful football games. And more importantly for you, Tim, you'll get to flip the script from week one to week two and stop staring at the same betting board that you have been for the last 4 months with every single high profile guest offering a perspective one way or another.
Yeah, that is the funny thing, right? And I'm sure it happens for you probably more so than for me, but you get the interview requests, which I'm so grateful to do any hit that, you know, we can promote, whether it be VSiN Primetime, the Tailgate Show, or this podcast. And I'm like, you know, and that's something that I want to talk to you about because, you know, you certainly get in on a lot of these numbers before there's a significant move. So we'll dive into that here in just a moment. But I am curious, you know, you are certainly someone, I'm not here to just kind of give you your kudos, but, you know, when I jumped into the gambling space, however many years ago, you guys were one of the first podcasts I turned to. So detailed in your research. So give us a little bit of a look behind the curtain on what your process was to prepare for the Bet the Board podcast. It's not like you're going anywhere. You're still doing CBS Sports HQ work. So what has your process been to prepare properly for a college football weekend?
You know, it's always interesting because years ago, and this makes me feel like a dinosaur in the industry, when you talk to folks behind the counter now, I mean, I know you have great relationships with Matt Gorilla at DraftKings, Chuck Esposito, who was my mentor in the space years ago when I was kind of a little bit wetter behind the ears learning the industry trade. college football lines didn't come out until early August. So you felt like you had all summer to try and zero in a lot of these teams, build your baseline numbers, and have a better understanding of which numbers you thought were going to come off a little bit different from market. Fast forward to where we are now, and a lot of the highest profile books in the national landscape will start putting out, you know, college football win totals on the prominent programs as soon as the previous season ends. We'll get game of the year pricing early, and it really is the early bird getting the worm. So for someone who doesn't spend 365 days a year and 7 days a week in college football, like our good friend Brad Powers, you know, I feel like I'm always playing catch up. Like, I'm not going to get the best of the number and have the opportunity to bet the Colorado Buffaloes regular season win total under 7.5 flat, watching it close two games lower where we're poised to go before kickoff against Georgia Tech. So rather than kicking myself for some of the numbers that I may have missed, I'm always charting some of the game of the year prices. I want to monitor a lot of the national books and just get a better understanding of which teams are being bought and sold in the market. Maybe not necessarily to impact the way that I'm building my macro level portfolio with win totals or conference futures, but to get a better gauge of which teams are going to be bet ons or bet against, especially the first couple weeks of the season. And while totals are going to take on a lion's share of the line movement, and we've seen this week when limits continue to increase, you can still get a slightly better understanding of the way the professional bettors are looking at the 136 teams in Division I football that are going to get lined in a week in, week out basis. So if I miss a number week one, I have to make sure that I'm quick on the trigger finger to be able to either buy or sell a team week two based on an additional data point and know what summer sentiment has been around a lot of these programs.
You know, something that I've talked to Brad about, I'm sure you've done it as well with Brad Payne or whoever it may be, is that overreaction. And you guys, I know a number of times your best bet might be an overreaction in recent years to what we just saw in the marketplace. And we have very few data pieces, only 9 FBS teams played in week zero. Hawaii potentially dealing with an injury with Micah Elejato. He did not practice on Tuesday. I know the hope is that he could play. Personally, I wouldn't play him against Arizona, especially with 3 games coming up at home that are all winnable. But yep. I look at a team like UNLV in our backyard, and I'll be honest, I did not get full eyes on this game. I know it wasn't pretty for Dan Mullen in week one, and they get to play a team that also played in week one. So, you know, I'm not asking you to go in depth on UNLV Sam Houston here, Todd, but is this an overreaction, or do we have to recognize maybe we incorrectly priced a team? Because this was 13.5 prior to both of these teams playing. Sam Houston went out and lost to Western Kentucky. UNLV beat Idaho State, but that was a 30.5 point spread. They won by just 7. And we've seen a 4-point move in this marketplace. And, you know, worth noting, you know, Paul Stone made a great point on social media earlier this week. This isn't a home game. This is actually being playing like 70 miles away from Sam Houston Stadium. So, you know, big picture more so, how much do you tend to look at overreactions and then try to maybe play off of those from a week-to-week basis, especially early on?
It definitely plays a role. But before we get into this, Tim, I want to lodge my formal notice here that if Hawaii is fighting for bowl eligibility on Friday, November 21st, when they come out here to the desert, I'm going to expect to be your consigliere and get that royal treatment.
Oh, I'll be there, baby.
From Rainbow Warriors Nation, then for the Micah Elejato homecoming, should he be able to make it through the rigors of a Mountain West schedule. But
Timmy Chang's wife came up to me and Matt Eumanns on the field there after the game-winning field goal and told us where their good luck charm. So yes, I am fully anticipating being there for a Friday night here in Vegas. And hopefully by that time, 6 wins has already been accomplished and I don't have to sweat any win totals here. And I could sit back and enjoy the Rainbow Warriors against the Rebels. But, you know, as we know in gambling, it's never that easy. So I'm sure I'll be sweating out that win total until the bitter end, probably that week, you know, that week 15 game against Wyoming.
Well, what we saw in week zero is a harbinger of things to come. Getting Sam Houston and Fresno State at home before the calendar flips to October may be a good thing for Hawaii. But you're right. I mean, when you have those limited data points, we say all the time as professional bettors, you don't want to overreact to just one 60-minute sample size. But in this current day and age of college football, you also don't want to underreact. And I think, you know, as you go through some of the box scores of the games that we saw unfold, look, I'm not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater as it pertains to Fresno State getting boat raced by a Kansas team where there was a real good two-way action battle right around that two-touchdown threshold. The same way that I'm a little bit more concerned about UNLV breaking in a bevy of new pieces, especially on the defensive side, and you close a 30.5 point favorite against a bottom 15, bottom 20 FCS defense in Idaho State, because we saw this last year with Texas Tech. I mean, they were a 31-point favorite in their season opener against Abilene Christian, had a hold off Abilene with a 2-point conversion late, won that game 52-51. What was interesting about their week two matchup is people thought it was a good buy low opportunity on Texas Tech for their game in the Palouse against Washington State. They took a significant amount of money. What do they do in that spot? They go out there and lose that game by 3 touchdowns. So I don't think you can necessarily fix all that ails this UNLV defense as quickly as 1 week in. But against the Sam Houston team that, in my opinion, was going to be a sell coming into this year, knowing it was a significant downgrade at head coach with Casey Keeler taking the job at Temple, Phil Longo getting his first job as a head coach at the FBS level, and trying to take a quarterback in Hunter Watson that was a little bit more of a ground and pound and kind of spread things out. I mean, that Sam Houston offense, if they go out this weekend and gash UNLV, Dan Mullen's going to be in for a world of hurt. So I didn't do much in that particular game. If anything, with the number dipping below 10 at some shops, would lean slightly towards UNLV, as I think their offense can run away and hide against the Sam Houston defense that looked ill-equipped to really be able to slow down Western Kentucky when they started to get going. Hawaii, on the other hand, I mean, you mentioned the quarterback injury, and I think that is a big reason why we've seen this number balloon from 13.5 out to that 17.5, 18 threshold. And then on Monday morning, you saw substantial under money come into the market, 55.5 down to 52. So you want to try and use what we've seen, but at the same time, the more data points you get on a lot of these teams, that's where you can make some wholesale changes, because for every team that we think we underreacted to in this college football landscape in 2025 and beyond, you are going to get teams like Florida State where the market didn't catch up nearly as quickly as they needed to with Boston College. And by year's end, a lot of us had downgraded the Seminoles upwards of 3 touchdowns.
Yeah. The pain enjoyed.
Oh,
last
it was,
year.
It was more than pain, and it was waving the white flag a lot sooner into the season than anything else. And I have been very delicately approaching Florida State's regular season opener on Saturday as a roughly 2-touchdown underdog, as they'll welcome in a team I know you are extremely high on, the Alabama Crimson Tide.
I am, and I haven't played that game just because of the position I took on them to make the college football playoff. You lose to Florida State, I think I might as well light that puppy on fire, knowing what's going on down the road in the SEC. Todd, I want to get to the game that we all will be watching on Friday. Well, hopefully we'll be watching if you're a YouTube TV subscriber like I am, but that's a discussion for another day. Noon Eastern.
You know, Tim, I can sell you my DirecTV password if you really need to make sure you have an opportunity to watch the game. It may come at a premium the longer you wait closer to kickoff. Think of it as an escalator that'll go into effect. If you want it Wednesday afternoon before the YouTube TV thing is resolved, it'll cost you one rate and 12 minutes as you're panicking before kickoff. You know, that may be 4 or 5x multiplier.
There might be a call to the home front saying, I'm staying at work to watch this bad boy. You guys enjoy the day. But, you know, Texas-Ohio State is so fascinating on a million fronts. The fact that we get a 1-2 or 1-3, depending on what poll you're a fan of, the top two teams in most futures pools going head-to-head in week one. And then you've got the unique dynamic of Arch Manning, his debut, not his debut, but his real coming out party, so to speak. And then you've got Ohio State. And look, we had Matt Grill from DraftKings Sportsbook on the show, VSiN Primetime, on Tuesday night. And he said, as of Tuesday, obviously things can change, that Texas was the biggest liability that DraftKings had, Texas on the money line. And right now, market-wide, 1.5 in favor of the Buckeyes. We'll talk more about this on Thursday's show. But, you know, Todd, as much as I want to jump in on Ohio State, and I probably will get there, to be honest, especially if this game gets to a pick or something like that, Ohio State is fascinating because not only is it the exit of Will Howard and Emeka Egbuka and Jack Sawyer and massive pieces. We know this team reloads from a recruiting front. They still have Jeremiah Smith. They still have, you know, Styles. They still have Downs defensively. But for you, from a power rating standpoint and the folks that you've talked to, how many questions are there regarding the coordinators? Because you lose Chip Kelly and you lose Jim Knowles. I mean, those are two elite coordinators, and you bring in Matt Patricia to play, you know, to run the defense, and you promote Brian Hartline, who, you know, has been pointed out, Ohio State is a team that once upon a time promoted Brian Hartline and then said, I don't know if this is going to work. We need to go get someone else. So I'm curious what you've heard and what you've done with Ohio State, because this game is just so phenomenally fascinating, in my opinion.
I think there are a lot of people in and around, you know, Buckeye country that are legitimately concerned about their ability to pick up right where they left off and have a seamless transition to a guy in Brian Hartline, as you referenced, that is known more as a recruiter and a developer of elite wide receiver talent. And there isn't anybody, in my opinion, that does it better in the college game than what Hartline has been able to accomplish there. But I'm not sure Hartline is even going to be the one responsible for calling plays in the season opener against the Texas Longhorns. From people I've spoken to, they think Ryan Day is going to be a lot more hands-on early on in the season while Brian Hartline learns the lay of the land. Not going to be reminiscent of Chip Kelly kind of taking control and essentially scrapping what the Buckeyes did offensively in their regular season finale loss to Michigan before they look like a completely different football team going into that opening round playoff game against Tennessee. And you mentioned Matt Patricia on the defensive side. Look, Caleb Downs is an absolute stud. So he's going to be able to erase a lot of scheme deficiencies and some of the inexperience that they're going to have on the first and second level. But let's see if Matt Patricia can make adjustments. And the one interesting part when you look at a game like this, I think Brian Hartline, Ryan Day, and Matt Patricia are going to know exactly what some of their players can do. And they'll have their best game plan on full display for the first 30 minutes. But if something goes wrong early on in Columbus, will they have the wherewithal, the experience to tap into, to be able to make the adjustments that I think a lot of us believe Steve Sarkisian and his veteran staff will be able to do at halftime? This game fascinating for a variety of reasons. When we look at the quarterback battle as well for Ohio State, largely unsettled as Julian Sand didn't quite pull away as quickly as people would have anticipated. So I almost get the feeling that while Texas will play with a chip on their shoulder, no doubt, and want to get a measure of revenge for what got away from them in Arlington in the college football playoff semifinals, that Ohio State can play the underdog card, that people don't have them, you know, they're not talking about them in the same vein as they are Texas. Power rating perspective, look, you can throw a blanket over these two teams. I make Texas a 1-point favorite on a neutral here. I know some people are a little bit higher in that particular regard. But because of all the uncertainty around the Buckeyes and the fact that there aren't key numbers in play, I can't get myself to a bet on this game yet. But we'll be watching with bated breath the first 30 minutes to see if we can find a halftime angle worth exploiting. And I think it'll provide a nice litmus test and a baseline for two teams that I think most of us in and around the college football world and community believe will be playing deep into the month of December. And I don't mean in the Champ Sports Bowl.
Todd, something that I picked up on certainly over the last couple of years of the podcast you did when you got to your, you know, best bet portion, because you did it later in the week and, you know, some of those numbers had been shaped a little bit by the professionals out there and you never wanted to give out a number.
Yeah, thanks Brad Powers for going early and not giving us the opportunity to share those good best bet numbers.
That's why I tried to have Brad on VSiN on like Tuesdays. I'm like, hey man, I need you on early here because I know you're peppering this board, but you know, we try to do the same on Thursdays on our podcast as well. Cause no one wants to hear, you know, oh, I got it at this number. Look, I'm not going to say all of us, but a lot of us have had an opportunity to maybe get some good CLV. But when you live in the content space, and I'm very excited to be here and give good numbers, how much have you guys, from a betting standpoint, kind of changed the way that you try to attack games, looking at team totals, first halves, because those numbers do come out a little bit later in the week? Are those areas that you felt are more attackable, if that makes sense, as a pro bettor?
So first things first, and you know, talk a little bit about it on Bet the Board, but I'm not sure I've always shared some of my betting philosophies with, you know, all the listeners, let alone folks that have been loyal listeners of your podcast here, Tim. I'm not by definition a high volume bettor by any stretch of the imagination, but given the way that the landscape has changed and the fact that, you know, DraftKings is going to put up 8 to 10 games, you know, the Wednesday before, so 10 days before those games kick off, what I've tried to do to tweak my process for numbers that I don't necessarily think are going to be available Tuesday, Wednesday, let alone Thursdays and Fridays, is bet a little bit smaller to try and pick off some of those prices that I think are too good to be true. And the more I dig into these games, you know, I'll either look to add to those positions if some of those numbers are available, not around keys, or in some cases where information may have changed or I may have uncovered an angle that I didn't feel as comfortable with, I'd like to think there's an opportunity to take a 14 and be able to lay a 12 and a half back and be perfectly comfortable, you know, trying to land a modest middle. So the process has changed quite a bit. And as you mentioned, you know, team totals, first halves, you know, there are opportunities and situations that I'll look to circle early on in the week. And I'll hope those numbers are available around some of those key numbers a little bit later. The one nice thing around team totals, and not quite first halves, because first halves do have a lot more key numbers, the sensitivity around being able to go over, say, a 34 and a half, 35 or 35 and a half won't necessarily change my handicap as much as it would some of the key numbers on a full game side or total. So I'll take a little bit more in the way of creative liberties there if I can find a team total and make sure there are a couple shops that are going to hang it before we try and get in there and blow up the market prematurely.
I want to go to Friday because this game is very intriguing. And I think, you know, I was joking with the radio show that I do on in Milwaukee because, you know, very casual college football fans. And I said, hey, look, I think this is the best week one ever because we've got three top 10 games. He said, oh, stop. And I said, look, Friday night, Auburn Baylor. This is a very under the radar game, not for us college football fans, but I think just the casuals out there. I think this is a pretty interesting game. And I know there's a lot of differing opinions. You know, someone like Paul Stone came on this podcast early on in the offseason and really liked Baylor here as a home dog. And right now there hasn't been that much movement. This thing got down a little bit to, I think, Auburn minus one over the summer. We've seen that pushback. Curious your perspective on this game, because Auburn, very intriguing. We know how big of a season it is for the for War Eagle and Hugh Freeze down there. So what do you make of Auburn Baylor? And was there anything that we saw at the end of the year last year that from Baylor that makes you a little bit hesitant in this spot?
First things first, I don't think I'm going to tell any of the listeners something they don't already know. Sawyer Robertson, the starting quarterback for Baylor, will be, in my opinion, the best player on the football field Friday night. So when you have the opportunity to get a short home underdog early on in the campaign and you have the quarterback that you believe to be better equipped of the two guys and arguably a guy that's going to be playing on Sundays, it's always going to make the underdog that much more attractive. Now, Baylor's gone through a little bit of attrition in their backfield, lost one of their key cogs during preseason camp, which I think throws a wrench into the plans there. But this was a Baylor team who really found its stride offensively in the latter portion of the season last year. Found myself on them, you know, a decent amount. Because for all the things that they had going wrong with their defense, the offense was able to outscore a lot of those problems, especially with numbers that felt like they hovered right around pick 'em to plus or minus three damn near every week. But the problem I see here for Baylor and what my biggest concern is going into this game is we saw when they stepped up in class, and while bowl games don't oftentimes provide a great indication of what we're going to get 9 months later, the difference in athleticism for what LSU was able to bring out there offensively against this Baylor defense is definitely cause for concern, because while Auburn won't have the same dynamic weapons and Jackson Arnold isn't going to be Garrett Nussmeier, this is an Auburn offense that should look a lot better this year than what we saw last year. You bring in a transfer and, you know, Eric Singleton from Georgia Tech, you can catch a short ball and turn it into an explosive play. Cam Coleman, I think, is only going to continue to improve. And Auburn brings back a very experienced offensive line, four of its five starters from last year. They had a couple of pieces that were power four starters in the transfer portal. And good or bad, you know, Auburn's offensive line really struggled in camp. This is where it gets challenging. Do we think that's a red flag for how they're going to perform against a Baylor defensive front that leaves a lot to be desired? Or do we think it's because Auburn's defensive line is going to be a disruptive force and make life extremely difficult for Sawyer Robertson and company? So for me, I did take a position earlier this summer on Auburn. I wouldn't tell anybody to run and lay that money line price now. But I do think we find ourselves in no man's land if we're trying to assess where the market sits from an asymmetric risk standpoint. For those folks that want to make a bigger bet on Baylor, there's no reason for them to run to the window midweek and take the 2.5. May as well wait this thing out as long as possible, hope a 3 flickers, and I don't think that'll stick. And if you're looking to try and bet Auburn, you know, you may be able to find a cheaper money line, or if you anticipate that Baylor is going to take some money, you can kind of wait a little while to see exactly how this game will settle in. But I do think these are two coaches who would be best served to get themselves off the hot seat with a season-defining win right out of the gates. We know life in the SEC doesn't get much easier for Hugh Freeze going forward. And for Dave Aranda, look, a lot of people have picked Baylor as their team to win the Big 12. Go out there and upset Auburn, albeit a modest upset, playing at home on the banks of the Brazos on Friday night. And people are really going to start to believe in Baylor's ability to compete with the Kansas States, Utah's, Texas Tech, Kansas States and company within the Big 12.
You know, two games I want to get your perspective on Saturday, because we've got... It's funny, you know, you and I were talking about it off the air. You know, it wasn't that long ago where, you know, we would get Toledo as a double-digit dog against Kentucky. We would get Southern Miss as a, you know, 17-point home dog coming off a 1-11 season. But we've got more information now. And as you mentioned, these numbers have been up much longer. So it does feel like, are we getting to the point with Toledo, Kentucky, or Mississippi State and Southern Miss that maybe we're getting a little too cute? Is this a situation where these numbers, the value's been sucked out on that popular dog, and now it might be time to look at the SEC team in those two respective games?
It's definitely buyer beware. I haven't taken a position on either game, was waiting and probably waited a little bit too long.
Yeah, we saw a little bit of Kentucky money come back into the market. Yeah,
and that's what I was hoping for, an opportunity. I know 7 flat kind of flashed briefly earlier this summer, didn't get in there. We saw Kentucky officially name Zach Calzada as their starter. I don't think that's what contributed to the number going from 7.5 to 9 in no man's land. But there are concerns about some of these, you know, Group of 5 teams stepping up in class. Toledo, we saw last year, went on the road to Starkville, as you mentioned, Mississippi State, and absolutely boat raced the Bulldogs. But I think that can work against them here, because if you're Coach Stoops and you're trying to motivate a team that's win total is 4.5 and getting bowl eligible, going to be a little bit of a difficult premise. Like, you go, hey, Toledo did this before to one of your conference brethren. You better be ready to go right from the opening kickoff. And while Jason Candle has been outstanding in the underdog role, 10.5, a much different bet than where the number sits. And look, Mississippi State Southern Miss, I think, is fascinating from a variety of fronts, because I have guys that I talk to regularly that I respect on both sides. Some folks were looking to take the 14 with Southern Miss earlier, and a very influential group, you know, laid prices of 10.5, 11. And then you saw a second wave come in earlier this week in that 12.5 range, kind of pushing it out. Southern Miss is a team that has been a buy on in a lot of the win total markets and some of the odds to win the conference. I'm not necessarily there yet thinking that Charles Huff is going to suddenly be able to create, you know, Huntington South down there in Hattiesburg. Yes, he brought down a lot of the members of the Thundering Herd, but you dig into Marshall last year, they were extremely fortunate to win the Sun Belt. I mean, their counting stats don't suggest the team that should have run away with the league and upset Louisiana Lafayette in the conference championship. So I think Mississippi State under 2 touchdowns is the only way for me to look. Blake Shapen will need time in the pocket. But I would lean towards both SEC big boys in those particular spots, more so than trying to make a case for, you know, little brother, for lack of a better term. But haven't bet either of those games, and I'm not sure I'm going to find myself involved in either of them.
So last week, I had the amazing fortune to sit down with Brent Musburger, and he told me he's still mad at Notre Dame because they stole Ara Parseghian back in the 60s when Notre Dame couldn't beat the Purple Cats. Things have changed a little bit for the Purple Cats.
two programs of slightly different trajectories over the last half century.
A little bit. But David Braun entering this year, you know, you think back to 2 years ago, and that was just a magical season for Northwestern. They win their bowl game, a very ugly bowl game against Utah. And now here they are, and they're a 6-point dog right now. I know there were some 7s out there, and I think that was a position that you ended up on with the Purple Cats. But I'm curious your perspective of this Northwestern team. Is this a buy low candidate this year? Some win totals out there at 3.5, juiced over very heavily. Are they live on Saturday down there in Tulane? Because we don't know what John Summerall is going to do at quarterback. I believe the report was, Todd, that Jake Retzlaff had taken the majority of reps heading into this game, but still questions at the quarterback position. I mean, Jake Retzlaff just showed up about a month ago down there in New Orleans. So curious your thoughts on this one on Saturday, Northwestern catching 6 against Tulane.
Yeah, interesting quote from Coach Summerall, and I'll read it directly from what he said. I'll probably name a starter at 10:59 a.m. on game day when we play at 11. We'll make a decision before then internally, but I don't know that I'll publicly put it out there. I don't know how that helps us. So Northwestern, in the back of their minds, may be wishing that it was Darian Mensah who they could prepare for in advance. But like they always say in college football, the element of surprise will get you so far. But if you don't have a true starting quarterback, at least right now, what does that say about the overall trajectory of where Tulane is going to be? And I think this Tulane team from top to bottom will take a slight step back. It's hard not to when you lose your starting quarterback, you lose a dynamic running back who transfers to Oregon. And while I do think Coach Summerall is destined for a higher profile job sooner rather than later, there may be some growing pains with the opening kickoff. Meanwhile, for Northwestern, look, they get an upgrade, in my opinion, at quarterback with Preston Stone. The SMU transfer gives them a little bit of a dual threat and some athleticism there. You mentioned Northwestern's win total. I do have a position over 3.5 there that between us, I'm hoping either makes or breaks by middle of October when you dig into Northwestern's schedule with home dates against UCLA, Louisiana, Monroe, Western Illinois, and Purdue, all on the books before October 18th. But this does provide an opportunity for them to go out there and pull off a little bit of an upset in that sweltering humidity down there in New Orleans. I think there's still some value in Northwestern at 6. I wouldn't discourage anybody who wants to build a money line round robin parlay for a game that I think could have some variance. You know, taking Northwestern on the money line in a contest where the total continues to shrink as we're in that 45.5, 46 range. But I think this Northwestern team defensively will be where they need to. Offensively, the biggest question is, do they have a receiver that can get some separation? Always difficult when you're looking to fade what I would call one of the best coaches at the G5 level going right now in Coach Summerall. But I think that uncertainty at the quarterback position and some unsettled skill positions as well may create some problems early on. So Northwestern, in my opinion, very live as a 6-point underdog in their opener for Brent Musburger. And I would love for them to pull off the outright upset and be 2-0. Going into that home date on Saturday, September 13th against the Oregon Ducks.
You hear that, Brent? You know, optimism for the Purple Cats. He was not too optimistic talking about the game down in Tulane. So we got some optimistic angles there on the Northwestern Purple Cats. All right, we'll wrap on this. Two teams that you do have win total positions on. And I want to start with Army. Interesting game to start the year as they take on Tarleton State, a pretty good FCS program. Right now, market shows them as a 14.5-point favorite. But, you know, Army had a magical season a year ago. They go undefeated in the AAC. I guess it wasn't so magical because they didn't win the Commander-in-Chief trophy, which is their ultimate goal every single year. But you lose Captain America and Bryson Daly. They lose Udo, the running back. He goes to Arizona State. And we know Army's not a program, Navy's not a program, Air Force not a program, Todd, that you can go rebuild in the portal. So FanDuel right now, you could still get 7.5 juiced under minus $1.52. This is a position that I took. Wes Reynolds actually kind of pushed me over the top. He wrote it up for our VSiN College Football Betting Guide. Do you anticipate some regression coming for the Black Knights, who, by the way, week two have to go out to the Little Apple and take on Kansas State, which will not be a walk in the park?
I am right there with Wes, under 7.5 on Army going into this season. I'd love nothing more than Tarleton to pull off the upset as a 2-touchdown-plus underdog Friday night. I'm not optimistic that is going to happen, but weirder things have unfolded in the past. This is an Army team who you go through their roster, and you highlighted some of the concerns when it comes to an overall program-building situation. Replacing that level of production without Bryson Daly there, extremely difficult. You mentioned not being able to get transfers in, but it didn't stop Army from having a transfer out.
Right.
Who's going to play a prominent role in Udo at Arizona State. And then you begin to go through Army's schedule week by week. And there are a lot of programs that Army will face later in the year with first-year head coaches that I'm sure they would have preferred to place right out of the gates. You know, getting Temple in early November, in my opinion, very different than Temple, you know, figuring things out under Casey Keeler if they were to play them in early September. The same could be said, you know, about a Tulsa team that I think can be improved. And I just don't have Army as clear-cut double-digit favorites in a lot of their games past the opener against Tarleton. And with so many coin flips out there, I think this is an Army team that getting bowl eligible would still be a tremendous season. And if that's the case, I think all of us will be thrilled if Army comes home 6-6, is able to go bowling so we can bet them like we do most service academies in the postseason, but cash a reg season win total at the same time. I'll say the swing game for me, honestly, comes pretty early on. Army does get the early bye week 3. They'll get North Texas at home. And Tim, as someone who I know had a piece of the mean green amid Bryson Daly gate going into that game last year, we'd love nothing more than North Texas to exact a measure of revenge and get their pound of flesh. Pulling off the upset right there along the banks of the Hudson, week three against Army, if the Cadets are having problems trying to figure out what their offensive identity will look like without Bryson Daly's dual threat abilities.
I do need to get to Mikey Stadium one of these days. It looks
I've never been. I have been told by everyone you have to make sure that you get there, you know, late September, early October, so you can maximize fall foliage and be there with that cool crispness in the air. I'm not sure being there Friday, August 29th for their opener would do it any justice.
Yeah, I was in that neck of the woods seven times in the summer of 2012 as the Aberdeen Ironbirds and the Hudson Valley Renegades took on. And I believe, if my memory serves me correct, the Aberdeen Ironbirds went 1-13 against the Hudson Valley Renegades back in 2012. So that was fun to be the voice of the Ironbirds that year in a very tiny little booth. Not on the banks of the Hudson, but not too far away from West Point. All right, we'll wrap on this. The Oregon Ducks, you know, we've talked so much about the Big Ten here. Obviously, we've discussed Ohio State, the curiosity with them. Penn State, expectations are high, very high for Penn State. Some people have them at number one in their power ratings. Oregon, you still can get a 10.5 under. DraftKings looks like the juice is minus 190. Always look around, see if you get a little bit of shorter juice there. I haven't bet it yet just because the schedule does seem relatively manageable, but what are your questions and concerns regarding Dan Lanning's squad coming off of a perfect regular season a year ago?
Yeah, I do have a position. Oregon's win total under a little bit better than the prevailing price tag, but I actually don't think under 10.5 minus 190 is the worst bet at all. When you look at this Ducks team and some of the questions they're going to have to answer, but to your point, the schedule extremely favorable for Oregon. So if you're going through looking at their 12 games, trying to find spots where they're going to be clear underdogs or underdogs at all, good luck. You're going to find one of them, and that'll be the whiteout for their trip to Beaver Stadium in late September. But there are games on their schedule that I think are extremely losable. And as you get deeper into October and November, a trip to Kinnick Stadium in November, never an easy task. A short week thereafter against the Minnesota team, they'll get USC at home, and they close out the regular season against the Washington team that I know both you and I are higher on, and I think the market will reflect that by the time that we get to, you know, week 13, week 14 of the season. But for Oregon, you replace so much in the way of defensive production. I mean, what is it? 15 of their top 19 tacklers or something in that ballpark are lost from that defense. It's a defensive line that I think is going to go through some growing pains. I'd love for them to face a power rushing team early on that could exploit that. So they may be able to work out some of those kinks with home dates against Montana State, Oklahoma State, a road trip to Northwestern, and a home date in the Civil War against Oregon State. But on the other side of things, to my knowledge, Oregon hasn't even officially named a starting quarterback yet. We all think it's going to be Dante Moore. I'd be surprised if it's not. But what's taking the Ducks so long when Will Stein has seen him in practice every single day? I do expect him to go through a maturation process and not look like the same deer in headlights as we saw during his limited tenure running Chip Kelly's offense in UCLA 2 years ago. But I think there are going to be some challenges for this Oregon roster. Do I think they're going to bottom out and go 8-4? Probably not. But I think it feels like this team has a 10-win ceiling, which should be good enough for the playoffs. And it wouldn't shock me at all if we were mentioning Oregon, you know, going into that regular season finale against Washington with an 8-2 record, needing to win that game to get into the playoff fold. So under 10.5 for me with Oregon. And if you like to live a little bit more dangerously or aggressively, as the kids say, maybe look at a no price for Oregon to make the playoffs this year. If the quarterback room isn't nearly as polished as what we've seen with two consummate veterans over the last couple of years in Bo Nix, who then seamlessly handed things off to Dylan Gabriel and ran that offense with brutal efficiency.
Well, maybe you can get a shock of the world. Montana State goes into Autzen on Saturday and pulls off the stunner.
I would be a lot more optimistic if Montana State's entire coaching staff wasn't out there in Pullman, Washington right now, and if Tommy Mellott was still under center instead of attempting to return kicks for the members of the Silver and Black, a stone's throw from where you and I both, you know, hone our craft.
Touchdown Tommy. I would feel a little bit better, yes, if he was showing up there for that game against the Oregon Ducks. Todd, really appreciate this, man. I know I speak for many When I say we'll miss your weekly breakdowns, not only for college football, but for the NFL, where will folks be able to see your lovely face this fall, since we won't hear the velvety tones on the Bet the Board podcast?
You know what? A little bit more scarce when it comes to college football above all else, since my primary responsibilities with CBS HQ, at least the way things stand now, as we all know, media is ever changing, is largely on the NFL front, you know, with a lot of pregame coverage from Monday, Thursday, and Sunday schedule. Some additional NFL coverage available on Covers for those folks who are a little bit strapped for time. We try and do things in a very succinct fashion. And a couple of radio affiliates for some of our colleagues around the country in college football hotbeds for Nashville, Birmingham, Oklahoma City, where we'll try and break down the college football cards, and I'll do my best job to circulate a lot of that stuff on social media. But appreciate you giving me the opportunity to wax poetic on your airwaves, since I know people loved when we invited you on to talk a little college hoops, which is very near and dear to you, on Bet the Board, and you kind of led me through those waters. And continued success for you, Matt Humans, and everybody else at the VSIN family as you guys continue to put your blood, sweat, and tears into this podcast. The summer series was outstanding, an integral in a lot of my preparation above and beyond what I would normally do for our now defunct podcast, and hope that you guys continue to climb those rankings and people out there listening, you know, once, twice, and three times a week, which I tip my hat to you, Tim. It's a lot of college football content to put together. One podcast with Brad and Payne was enough for me each week, deep dive in the five or six marquee games on the schedule.
Look, I'd like to sit here and tap myself on the chest and say I was brilliant on my lone appearance on the Bet the Board, but that was all Jim Root giving out Oakland first to 15 when Jack Golke hit 10 threes against Kentucky. So I'd like to take credit for that, but I am a man who gives credit where credit's due. That was all the hoops aficionado Jim Root. But Todd, this was great, man. Appreciate it, and we look forward to hearing from you soon.
You got it, my friend. Best of luck this college football season.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, that's going to do it for the podcast. Thanks to Wes Reynolds, and thanks to Todd Furman for joining us here on the podcast. Looking forward to, I won't officially announce it yet, but someone that has been on my show a number of times, or hoping to have him on the Wednesday feed every Wednesday with some updated numbers as the season goes on. But have not locked that one in just yet, but I do think that one should start next week with some data from the week one games. As always, you could shout at me, whether you hate me or love me, at One Tim Murray's, where you can find me on social media. Please do continue those five-star reviews. Super humbling to see them come in. Thanks to all of you for making this podcast excel as much as it has here throughout the offseason, and now the football season is here. We will have our Thursday show with Matt Humans coming up in this feed every Thursday, where we run through our favorite plays, run through all the biggest games. I know that is a favorite of all of you as well. So we will run through all of our best bets on the Thursday podcast. Continue to rate, review, and subscribe. Hey, man, we got into the top 100. Do we get greedy? Do we get into the top 80, top 75? Let's keep it rolling here, man. This has been such an amazing ride this summer, the growth of this podcast. And I will say one last thing to Todd Furman, who joined the podcast. I really appreciated him shouting us out on social media. Didn't have to do that. I didn't ask him to do that. And he shouted out us and a couple of other podcasts that I do listen to, certainly, as well. So very appreciative of Todd's support of this podcast and for him jumping on. And let's keep it rolling, boys and girls. Let's make this thing rise up the charts. Thanks to our sponsors, Rainbow Authentics and Kahala Shirts. We'll be back tomorrow with another episode of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast, a breakdown of the week one board. And fingers crossed, let's get UL Monroe home -23.5 against the depleted roster of St. Francis of PA.